Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Thursday, March 25th. Derek Van Riper here with Michael Beller. We've got a very special guest. It's Jake Seeley. We never hear from Jake on the baseball podcast. What is the occasion? What's going on, Jake?
I don't know. What is baseball? Are we doing that? What is this sport we're talking about? That's the one with the orange ball that goes into the net, right? That's what we're doing.
Pretty close.
Hey, baseball starting next week. I got to at least do one podcast with you guys, right?
I think so for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing a ton of work. You've got the projections and rankings. You worked on the custom rankings tool with Dom Lucision, I think is the correct way to pronounce Dom's name.
I'm glad you tried.
I can't spell it. I think I can pronounce it. Al Melchior helped with that, too. You're working on articles. And, of course, you are doing fantasy football stuff, too. So if people are getting into fantasy football early, you and Brandon Funston and Beller, you guys do the football pod together. So you have everybody covered there as well. And we have some overlap on guys that we like. We kind of figured today's episode is more or less a way to catch up and get a team that if you listen to absolutely no podcasts until you listen to this one, you would draft a team that the three of us like even if you don't like your own team. So, I mean, that's a pretty good way to come out of a draft. Like, have a team that the three of us like even if you yourself hate it. So, let's get to some players that are your guys, Jake. Victor Robles, I think he stole him from me. I'm not even allowed to talk about him on Rates and Barrels anymore because I think I've mentioned him 12 episodes in a row from January to early March. But all right, so back me up. What do you like about Victor Robles?
So what's going to be, and people could catch the theme of a lot of the guys talking about it, is not throwing out 2020, but let's chill out about 2020. And a lot of them are going back to last year when we were drafting and what we were thinking about Robles and what he was coming off from 2019. And that was, 17 and almost 30 stolen bases. And everybody's like, oh, he has to leave a little bit more in the tank to be able to do a little bit better. And obviously it was a miserable year. And all of a sudden, nobody wants him anymore. And that's just baffling to me. I mean, we're still talking about somebody I'm pulling up right now. I want to double check his age. Yeah, he's not even 24 yet. Yep. And we're writing him off after last year. I say we as in like where his ADP is. It's just not representative of like what he could do. For somebody who last year, again, I look at last year's ADP versus this year's ADP is probably the biggest difference. That's all you need to know about what people thought about him. I still think he has 30-plus stolen base upside. I don't think he'll necessarily get there. But you give me 20 stolen bases and 15 to 20 home runs, which is more than doable. The average isn't going to be pretty, but you put that together, I mean, 15 and 25, I think you guys saw this. I said it in one of the, I think it was my bowl prediction article about stolen bases these days. I mean, all it takes is about 100 stolen bases, and you might be winning the category this year. So to get Robles in the teen rounds and 25 stolen bases on decent category production in all five categories, decent to good, that's really why I love him. I just think he's being disrespected this year.
I see a lot of similarities. Yeah, like I think we all love Victor Robles. I mean, I see a lot of similarities to Starling Marte. Like, I think that's the kind of player he is. I don't know if we're going to get more power. I think we may get more batting average, though. I think that's part of the extra appeal. We don't have to get it for him to make value where he's going, but we could see a guy that continues to develop as a hitter, puts more balls in play, and ends up hitting 260 or 270. And there's an outside shot that he's atop the lineup for the Nats a lot more often than he was in 2019. He was buried. He was buried in 2019 when he had that great season.
Yeah, I have him inside my top 40 outfielders, right by Jorge Soler and Will Myers and Laureano. That's right where he's sitting for me.
Yeah, that feels, I mean, more than fair with what he could be. I wrote my last Stockwatch column of the spring this week, and I called him an inverse Luis Robert in terms of homers and steals, right? He can be that at like 100 picks cheaper than Luis Robert. And, you know, I think there's a little bit more upside perhaps to Robert. But, yeah, I mean, Victor Robles is someone who I think the pendulum has swung far too strongly against him based on 2020. And, you know, 2020 is like a Rorschach test. We can, you know, sort of see almost whatever we want to see in 2020. But I think that a young guy with the pedigree Robles had, with what we all thought about him, seemed to be industry consensus a year ago. I feel pretty good about buying back in at the 2021 price. I mean, I would feel pretty good about buying back in at a little bit higher than what the 2021 price asks you to do. I'm willing to give young guys with the talent that he has the benefit of the doubt going into this season. Another young guy that you like, Jake, and I'm with you on this, is Nick Madrigal. I guess what I'm really with you on is I just want a piece of the White Sox offense. DVR's heard me say this a million times. He's probably getting sick of it, but like, we don't think about offensive environment in baseball exactly the same way we do in football, where it's like, all right, just give me a piece of that really good offense and I'm happy with it. I think we should think about it with the White Sox. I really want to buy in on this team. Madrigal is a great way to do it. Why are you highlighting him specifically?
It's funny. I was talking to Chris Meany yesterday, and he's like, is it possible that you could draft the entire White Sox lineup? We were trying to figure it out. It was like, including Giolito, and get most of their team. And I was like, you probably need like three picks in the third round to be able to make it happen. Yeah. But the point was, is what you're talking about. It's just, we want to be involved with the White Sox. And, you know, there's years past where like we wanted to be involved with the Cubs and the Rockies before they got rid of everybody. And so I think that's a good point. What you say is, it's the different landscape of understanding that certain scenarios for players make them better. But even as Madrigal, it's another one to go right back to the Robles situation. Look where people were taking Madrigal last year on the upside that he has for the stolen base department and the average. That's the biggest thing. It's like, look, you're getting him in the 20 plus rounds. He may be starting to creep up recently because there are some people that, like myself, are talking about him. But when you're talking about 300 average, the ability to steal 30 if they let him, the only issue might be if he's hitting the bottom of the lineup, which still isn't bad for the White Sox. But hitting down there and maybe not getting to steal as much, I think 25 is a nice floor, and I still think he has the speed for 30. I actually think he has the speed for 40, but I don't think he'll ever get there. But you get 330 in the 20-plus rounds. That forget what else he adds, because he's not going to be power. But I'm saying, like, forget the runs, forget the RBIs. You give me a 300 average and 30 stolen bases in the late rounds, I'm going to take that every single time. And a 300 average and 30 stolen bases with a decent run production and decent RBI, doesn't have to do that much. That'll land him inside the top 100 hitters. So you're talking about a top 100 hitter going in, what, round 21, 22 right now? Like I said, it might have moved up a little bit recently, but it's baffling to me. I'm looking right now, and he's inside my top 12 at second base. Although, I mean, second base is kind of relative to a terrible position.
So when you target someone like Madrigal, it's obviously a late sort of dart that you're throwing in a lot of shallow mixed leagues, but do you seek out someone like a Joey Gallo or a Miguel Sano, a low average, huge power guy, and kind of merge those two players together? Because I think you could argue that Sano and Gallo are undervalued for similar reasons. They have one category that they're great in and one that they're, you know, very flawed in. But if you pair them, that could be a really nice combo.
Yeah, so it's, I'd say I don't aim to do it, because obviously, you know, any type of snake draft, you can aim all you want, and by the time you get halfway through the draft, all of a sudden it's out the window. But what I think your point is, it opens up that flexibility where I actually do have a team talking about that. I have a team with Gallo and Robles and Madrigal, because I think that knowing in the back of my mind, and so this is where I say, like, you can't always promise yourself the targets that you're going to get. But when you're talking mid-round teens and you're talking 20-plus like a Robles, like a Madrigal, and knowing that I'm willing to jump two rounds potentially to make sure I get those, and knowing what they're going to bring, to your point, DVR, is that I can say, all right, if Gallo is on the board, I'm more willing to take them a slightly above cost or be the one that bites that bullet, because I know those guys are probably going to, like, 90% chance I'm going to get them. And there's some other few guys that are going later that are similar category wise, but I think that's what people need to understand, is what you just said, is like, knowing if you have late round values, 15 to 20 round picks that you're probably going to get, and they're going to carry those categories, you can absorb those hits. And you know me, I've always been the kind of guy that's like, I don't care about taking Gallo anyway. I just don't want to take, you know, a Gallo, a CJ Cron, and I like another Miguel Sano. Like, I don't load up on all these guys. You can take a hit one or two times. And I think people overrate that. They're so scared of Gallo because one guy isn't going to make that big of a difference in your average.
Yeah, it's almost like people need to sit down, do the math, and say, okay, what if I put Gallo on the team that has all these other guys? Oh, it only lowers my average by about, you know, 0.03. That's
right,
not
right.
That much in the grand scheme of things. It's a risk we're taking to get that extra payoff. You're actually pretty high on the Mets this season from a fantasy perspective. Well, some of them. So which Mets are you investing in the most heavily?
This is funny. It's like there's legitimately probably three that I really like, three that I really don't like, and then a bunch of them are just like, all right, they're cool. I'll give you the three that I really do like, and it's for three different reasons. So Pete Alonso, that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, but it's the surprise of I'm willing to take him closer to last year's ADP. I'm not obviously taking him at the turn of the first round where he was going last year, but where he's going this year. So when I wrote him up in the bowl predictions, I said he's going to be the only guy to get 50 home runs this year. And I said, again, because he was the only got to do it when he did it. But it's a lot of things that happened to Pete last year. It wasn't just 2020, but it was also, as we talk about all the time, is batters, when they come out hot, you know, we know this goes both ways, but pitchers adjust to batters. They find their holes. They find their ways to attack them. Same thing with pitchers. Batters figure them out and figure out how to hit their stuff. But with Pete, what you saw last year was twofold.
First name basis Pete, over here.
I know. Pete Alonso, I don't know why I've been saying Pete. That's how much I like him, first name basis. With Alonso, as you look at last year, pitchers did figure this out. Stop letting him destroy fastballs. And I mean obliterate fastballs. If you want an advanced stat, if you go look at Fangraphs, the value for him hitting a fastball was over 30, which is just don't throw him a damn fastball. And that's what happened last year. He started to see a lot more off-speed stuff, and he admitted that his adjustment took a little bit longer. He was chasing more than he wanted to. He wasn't forcing. Like sometimes, and people who follow baseball know this, like even if the slider is going to be a strike, sometimes it's not the best in your ability to go chase it anyway because you're just not going to make as quality contact. And that's what you saw. His barrels percentage, his hard hit took a little bit of a dip. Like there's a lot of numbers that just took slight dips and it, you know, it equaled out to having less power last year. But all that being said, you project him out over a full season, he was still on pace for 45 home runs. It wasn't that big of a drop-off. So if he's saying the truth, which I believe, is that he's a sophomore. He adjusted. Now it's his turn to come around. I think he bounces back. I think Jeff McNeil, again, I talked to Chris yesterday, and this is the one I told him. I say, Jeff McNeil, to me, is the new Justin Turner. He took a while, didn't have a lot of hype, and then nobody wanted to believe him. And nobody wants to believe that he's good. It's just because he didn't debut till he's 26, and he's just kind of like, is he really good? How many years does he have to do it at this point? So Jeff McNeil could be a batting average winner for the MLB. Mm-hmm. So I love him. And then the third one that I like, and I don't love this guy, but J.D. Davis, mostly because the Mets didn't find an answer at third base. And I know his defensive liability, they still want to find an answer. And maybe he gets the Kyle Schwarber treatment at third base and they yank him late in the game and put in Villar for defensive purposes and slide people around or whatever it might be. But all that being said, you're still getting me 480, 500 at-bats of a third baseman who's going that. J.D. Davis is going for free in a lot of leagues. So that's really why. It's not that I love J.D. Davis, but if you're going to give me a nothing price on him, I'll take the chance. I'll stash him on my bench.
So we are in big time agreement on Jeff McNeil. This is a guy who it's not like he's going for nothing, right? He's inside the top 100 in ADP over the last like 10 days or so of NFBC drafts. So, I mean, it's not like you're just getting him for free, but I mean, as you said, like how many years does he have to do exactly the same thing right before we take it at face value and be like, all right, this is the hitter Jeff McNeil is. I would be a little bit more excited if he were, you know, so far from Luis Rojas, we've seen a lineup that's got Brandon Nimmo leading off, Francisco Lindor hitting second. I think we have to assume that's the way opening day is going to start. I would love to see McNeil bumped up into like the two spot and Lindor hitting third. If I were managing the Mets, that's the lineup that I would be trotting out there.
Oh,
but
not even that. Take Nimmo out. Stop. Why are
take Nimmo out of the
baseball world
yeah,
and the Mets?
Too.
Why? What is Nimmo brought that like everybody's so enamored with him? Like, can we stop with Brandon Nimmo? He's okay. Wait, because he comes from Wyoming, where nobody watches baseball. That like, oh, cool. Let's like give him every chance he can get.
I want to weigh where Jeff McNeil's hitting in the top two, but wherever he's in, first, second, sixth, whatever it might be, I am totally in on Jeff McNeil. One, we're mostly talking about guys who we like, but one guy where you and I are different here on this same Mets team is Dominic Smith. I am very much in on Dominic Smith. So, why are you so wrong here? Why are you out on him?
Well, it's twofold. So I'm going to go right back to the Kyle Schwarber example. I'm legitimately concerned that you're going to get a lot of games where he gets three at-bats and he's getting yanked in the eighth, ninth inning for defensive reasons. Like, that's because if you look at the Mets' depth now, they went out, you know, besides the Pilars and Villar, and like maybe Villar shifts J.D. Davis back to the outfield for a few. I'm not saying that's a great move. I'm just saying there's so many options on this team now, especially in the outfield. I mean, they're cutting guys that we used to talk about, like Malik Smith, and I don't think he's making the team. He might have even been already sent down. But all that being said is, like, there's a lot of options where they can shift people around and get him off the field. And that's my biggest concern, is that the Schwarber treatment leans into a 460 at bat season. And that's a big difference between somebody getting 500. The second part of it is maybe his bat is so good, as we saw last year, that they don't pull him even for the defensive reasons. But he was top 12 in BABIP last year. And I'm not saying BABIP's like, I think BABIP's kind of normalized, where I feel like 5 years ago, everybody was like, oh my God, BABIP is everything. If you have a high BABIP, you're going to regress. If you have a low BABIP, you're going to be better. But still, I don't know that Dominic Smith is a top 12, even top 20 BABIP guy. I do think he's a talented player. For the longest time, we were saying Dominic Smith, you know, if he could get some playing time, maybe he could, you know, fulfill that promise. I still don't think he's that good average wise. Like, I'll put it this way. You told me a bet on him hitting over 300, I would take that bet a million. I would put my house on that bet that he's not going to hit 300 this year, and maybe I'm going to lose my house. But unless he does that, I just don't see him. I don't see him getting everyday play because of the defensive concerns. And so maybe that's where I'm wrong.
Yeah, I
knew you were really getting into your sports betting, Jake, but that's getting pretty extreme.
I go back to 20.
Hey, I told
you,
I rage betted.
I just look at 2019 with him, and that's what gives me confidence that 2020 was at least, you know, I mean, he's going to hit 316 with a 377 OBP over the full season. Of course, I don't think that, but in 89 games, 200 plate appearances in 2019, he gave you 282, 355, 525, 11 homers. Like, I think that it's sort of similar to Jeff McNeil, and it's not the exact same volume of trips to the plate, but we now have close to a full season's worth of Dominic Smith at bats, where he's been the guy that he's been over the last two seasons. So I feel like I wouldn't want to jump up and take him. You know, I mean, he's not a guy I'm reaching for, but he's a guy who I'm very happy to get at cost. And again, this Mets offense is one, you know, not quite the White Sox level, but similar enough where this team could be scoring a lot of runs game in and game out, and I like to find investment in them. So I'm sorry, Jake. I mean, you're not going to lose your house, but I think you're wrong about Dom Smith.
Okay, well, we're talking about bets. If I told you 135 games and 480 at bats, would you take the over?
I would. I think he's too. He's been too good a hitter over the last two years.
And that's where the difference comes in.
Yeah.
I think, and those are and I put that because those are pretty close to the numbers I projected him for. Because I do think I'm on the side of losing the Schwarber at bats.
Yeah. Which is fair. But I just think he's been too good a hitter to not be a regular starter for this team.
And
if he's hitting fifth every game, yeah, I just think he's going to be able to get there for us and for fantasy managers. But I guess that's enough Dom Smith for now, right?
Well, we could keep hitting on the Mets. We could talk about how I don't like Marcus Stroman either. I like hitting on the Mets.
Why don't you like Marcus Stroman?
Unless this new pitch is going to turn him into a strikeout machine. He's never been a strikeout. This is my same issue with, I like Marcus Stroman the player. I'm rooting for Marcus Stroman the player. Even as a Mets fan, now they got rid of the Wilpons, I'm rooting for Marcus Stroman to break out. But I feel like we've been asking him to break out for 5 years now. I think Marcus Stroman is who he is. He's a fine pitcher. But he's a fine pitcher the same way, like, I'm looking where I even have him. I have him at like 65. Like, what's the difference between Marcus Stroman and the rest of the low K, high whip guys? And at this point, he is a high whip. It's like a 1.3 average constantly. And I don't see him getting to even a K per nine. Like I said, unless this new pitch that he's been working on is a magic pitch that maybe he got from Ohtani, I don't see Stroman getting to that level. So he's somebody for me, for talking fantasy football, for the comparisons, is he feels like that bye week replacement. Like, it's like, all right, he's fine, but does he really help your team? Like, he kind of feels like a net neutral in fantasy baseball for me, and that's why I don't hate Stroman, but people are drafting him as a positive, and I just don't see a positive return value on having Stroman on your team.
My quick case for him is that I think he's good at limiting hard contact, especially home runs. Like, home run suppression is a legitimate skill. We did see the Ks tick up during his brief time with the Mets in the second half of 2019. It's a small enough sample where it's hard to say that he owns those skills, but being right in the NL where we don't have the universal DH, at least as of right now, 1 week before opening day, there could be some crazy last-minute change. I think we do hold some sort of K increase compared to what he was doing in Toronto. I think he's just solid. I mean, look at his career, 3.76 ERA, 1.29 WHIP. If you draft him expecting ratios like that, you might get those over 180-plus innings in a season where a lot of guys don't go 180 innings. And if the Mets are anywhere close to as good as the win totals suggest, you probably come away with a lot of wins to go with those good ratios and a decent strikeout rate. So I'm in at the price. I don't think he's a must-have sort of player. But I think you – I don't know if it's the Mets fandom – maybe that's pushing you against Stroman here, but I think you could like him a little more than you do.
Expecting the worst at all turns.
What a surprise, trusting Carlos Carrasco. Another injured pitcher to stay healthy. What the Mets just haven't learned, even with new ownership. No, but here's what it goes out to. I feel like Stroman's an innings eater for fantasy. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just compiling a solid ERA, but the WHIP doesn't help. And I think that's what it comes down to. So again, another one I hope I'm wrong on, but it's not even the Mets fandom. Is I used to draft Stroman for years, especially with the Blue Jays, and I got tired. I mean, he was getting hammered by the AL East for a while there, but he had that one really good season. And I just feels like that was his best, and even his best wasn't that good.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, let's move on to Julio Urias. This is another guy you look at and you say, wait, he's only 24? He's been around for a while. I mean, he was pitching in the Midwest League, I think, as a 16 or 17-year-old. It was just ridiculous how young he was when he started pitching professionally for the Dodgers. 3.20 career ERA, 1.25 WHIP. That doesn't really fit a 3.20 ERA. 11 appearances in the regular season last year, but 10 starts. So it looks like the Dodgers have finally, despite what they did in the postseason, made that switch with how they use Urias. What is your projection for him, Jake, and why does he get there?
Yeah, I think I'll give you my projections for Urias. He's in my top 25. I have him for a 3.62 ERA, so the ERA is not even that spectacular. But a 1.19 WHIP. If you look at the last two seasons, which is about 140, 130 innings, somewhere around there, the WHIP's actually at 1.11. So that's high, too. Mm-hmm. But the strikeouts, like, he's somebody, I believe, in being over a K per nine. They dipped a little bit last year in that abbreviated season, but he's been somebody who's been working on new stuff. And I'll take somebody, like, the old dog, new tricks with Stroman, but I'll take the young person learning their repertoire more than I will Marcus Stroman. And here's the biggest one. This is just going to be a testament to somebody to work with. Anytime Eno gets all over involved with somebody, I'm double, triple, quadruple checking that pitcher, because when he gets enamored, I'm like, oh, okay. So I already had Urias inside my top 35, and then I started reading what Eno was saying. So anybody who hasn't read that, go check it out. By the way, still $1 a month to sign up. There you go. Man of the people. If it's good, check out Urias and see why he loves him, and you'll see why I have him inside top 25. And that's really what it comes down to. It just comes down to projections. Even at 160 innings, which I have him at, I think he caps out there. You know, 9 wins, but 160 strikeouts to 3.62 ERA, 1.19 WHIP, and that gets you inside the top 25.
Is 160 a little bullish, though? Right? I mean, like you said, so it was 134 over the last two years. So you have 134. You have 55 last year. We know the innings concerns across the league. You have Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin, who are going to have some sort of role between starting and relieving all season long. Like, my only concern with him is that if anyone – I feel like he and David Price are the two guys who are going to lose the most innings to Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin. I feel like the top three in this rotation, Kershaw, Bauer, Buehler, like, those guys are locked in for their workloads, and it's the other two who are going to lose the most opportunity as the Dodgers massage this 7-man pseudo-rotation.
And that's a valid argument. I think this is going to be another situation of where your counter argument about Dominic Smith is my counter argument for Urias. He's too good. Yep. They're not going to screw around with it. I have him for 30 games, 25 starts. So, you know, if you want to say 32 games and 20 starts, then obviously you pull down the innings and you pull down the projections overall because the strikeouts are going to drop with it. So we're on similar arguments, but for different players. I just think Urias at this point, and 160 isn't even really unleashing. And actually, I double checked the look. I have him 155, so I overshot myself a little bit, but even 155, I could see the concern. But the good news here, so for this one is, depending on what draft you're in, you're either going to miss him or you're going to get him, because you're going to have somebody who wants to take him, or you're going to have somebody who's like, has your concern, and he's going to be in a reasonable, he's still at a reasonable ADP, but if you look at his variance of like top to bottom, actually Dominic Smith is ridiculous. I don't know if you saw that. Dominic Smith's high is like in the 60s, and then his low is at like the 230 rate. It's ridiculous how big his range is, but Urias sees like a similar, smaller one at pitcher, so I understand your concern.
All right. I wish we were live streaming this, because if we were, I would have taken a screenshot of our rundown and I would be throwing it up on the screen right now. If you're watching this, you know, Derek's got a Padres hat on, but don't let him fool you. There's a Brewers sweatshirt on. This guy's a Brewers fan, and we have Jake's My Guys listed in order, right? And we talked about Victor Robles and then Nick Madrigal and then the Mets. And then we curiously skipped a line to Julio Urias, and that line that we skipped is Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and Javier Baez of the Chicago Cubs. I mean, you know, is DVR trying to suppress the fact that the Cubs still exist? I don't know. You out there can make your own conclusions on that. Jake, you know, I'm not going to lie about being a little bit biased about these guys. I feel very good about Bryant, Rizzo, and Baez all bouncing back in 2020. But I'll let you make the unbiased argument in favor of them.
It's 2020. And so, you know what? I'm looking at this team as a whole, and everything that could possibly go wrong, including performance, went wrong for this team last year. And if this was they've played for three seasons and had a miserable one, and be like, all right, maybe the league's adjusting, maybe he wasn't as good, maybe what? But we're talking about players with 4, 5, 6, 7 years of a career. And then, I mean, look at Javier Baez. I just pulled it up. Career 264 average, yet even before that, it was 281, 290, 273, 273. You got the 30 average-ish home runs, but mid-20s at worst. And he hits 203 with 8 home runs last year, and the power wasn't even that bad. But him, Chris Bryant, same thing. I understand the Chris Bryant injury concern. If everybody wants to push back on that, that's fine. I'm not going to debate you about that. But Chris Bryant, healthy. And then Anthony Rizzo. Again, Anthony Rizzo was a borderline first rounder, and all of a sudden we're like, oh, Anthony Rizzo sucks now. What the hell is wrong with Anthony Rizzo? They're just the Cubs as a whole feel like a team that maybe their perception's pushing them down a lot too. And he wasn't even going to be on this list, but you talk about playing time for the Kyle Schwarber argument. Now, I don't think he's going to have to deal with that. It's Jock Peterson. Nobody wants Jock Peterson because he's been screwed around with his lineup situation back with the Dodgers so much that now you give me 500 at-bats from Jock Peterson, and I think he's somebody that's going to hit 30-plus home runs. I'm just bullish on the Cubs from a fantasy perspective, mostly on the hitting side. I don't love their pitching. But it really comes down to, and the Chris Bryant one is, I tweeted this out, and I got a lot of hate for it because nobody can understand context, even though I started this by saying, I'm taking Anthony Rendon every single time over Chris Bryant. I'm not taking Anthony Rendon at a 7-round extra cost over Chris Bryant, and that's my biggest difference. It's like, if you want to tell me 3 or 4 rounds, fine. But if you take their last 4 healthy seasons for the both of them, where they played 136 games, and again, that's injury risk if you want to include that, but when they both played 136 games, and you take their averages and compare them to each other, better average, better power, more RBI or fewer RBI, more runs. Basically, if you take their 5 categories and put them together, you're getting almost the exact same players, just depending on if you want power or average. Again, I'm taking Rendon. I'm just saying, Chris Bryant, Rizzo, Baez, even Jock, switching teams. Like, I just feel like everybody is hating on the Cubs right now, and I'm going to take history over one abbreviated weird season.
In your face, DVR.
There are buying opportunities there, but I figured, A, we talk about the Cubs a lot since Beller's here on a regular basis, and B, I would be kind enough to let him toss that softball up there since he could add a little extra hype if he wanted to.
Wait, have you talked about the Bears quarterback situation yet? Have you got that slid into the baseball show?
I'm looking forward to that. Like every day from July 1st until the end of football season, every time we're on a pod, we're going to talk about the Bears quarterback situation, man. Because it brings me so much joy.
The Bears, let me just jump in really quick and say that the Bears Twitter account tweeted out a picture of Andy Dalton with just QB1 as the caption yesterday. And if you want to have a little fun, go and look through the replies to that because they were pretty great.
I mean, I'm sure Uncle Rico throwing a football over a mountain or throwing a steak at Napoleon, that was probably their QB1 just stamped right on it. One more of your guys, Jake. I have not drafted this guy anywhere yet. It's Charlie Morton. Nice discounted price compared to where he was going last year. He had some injuries he dealt with in the shortened season. Very old, but he goes to Atlanta, so he's on a good team. The stuff looked good again in the playoffs. So what gives you confidence in Morton being able to put it together for one more good season?
You kind of just touched on all the reasons in a short version, but if he's healthy, yes, the age is concerned, but I mean, even Verlander before he got hit with a fortunate Tommy John, but look at him. And I'm not saying Verlander's the same type of pitcher, but it's similar to football. At this point, the age, it's technology, it's our life, it's medicine. We're going further into sports than we ever have sports-wise when it talks about the health and stuff like that. So if he's healthy, he's another one. The 3 years prior, 3 ERA, the FIP and the XFIP and all the metrics match up and line up with that. Over 10 per 9, whether it's almost 11 in one season. And if you want to do my favorite, which is strikeout percentage minus walk percentage, even in the discounted year last year, it was still 18.8. It was 23 before that, 19.7 and 18.3. So, I just look at Morton's talent, and you just mentioned, if he's healthy, that's all I care about. If he's healthy, Atlanta situation, talking about playing in the NL, talk about pitching for Atlanta, who, similar to Tampa Bay and Houston and Pittsburgh and some other teams, can get the best out of their pitchers for what they've been able to do. I think Morton's due for a bounce back. I actually have Charlie Morton. I have him ahead of Urias, by the way. I have him in front of one spot in front of Paddock at pitcher 22, starting pitcher 22.
Oh, you're high on Paddock then.
Yeah, I am high on Paddock. I'm a sucker for Paddock. I'm going down with that ship. I am definitely going down. If Paddock is going to ruin, I'm trying to think who he is. Oh, he's the new sitting. All those everybody had was enamored by Syndergaard, and not the only one. But Syndergaard's one season. We've been living off that for 3 years now, even before his injury. I kind of feel like the same. Like I finally gave up on Syndergaard because I said he's too predictable. Paddock, I'm a sucker for him. I'm a sucker for him for at least one more year.
Whenever I think of pitchers who I'm a sucker for, I guess it's appropriate that I've got a siren going out my window there. It's the first guy who comes to mind is Scott Baker. I was in on Scott Baker just year after year after year after year. And it never came through. And that's the first thing that comes into my mind. I love Charlie Morton. I love this Atlanta. I think it's an incredibly high ceiling rotation. Like there are some obvious risks. Can Ian Anderson be the guy for a full season that he was in the short season last year? Morton, health, Mike Soroka. Health, Drew Smiley, health. I mean, there's a lot of questions with all that, but I think it's such a high ceiling.
That's the other one.
Yeah.
I was a sucker for Drew Smiley for so long.
Yeah, right. I mean, I feel like we all were, but man, I think the Braves are winning the World Series this year, and I love that rotation. Ian Anderson is one of my guys as well. I just think that he's not only do I buy the talent, obviously, and do I think that he can be the guy for 162 that he was for last year. But I also think that if you're just looking at ADP, that he represents the bottom of a tier, and he's the last guy. It's like him and Jesus Luzardo are going really close to one another, and they're the last guys, I think, in the entire starting pitching group that you can look at and realistically say, if everything lines up, this is a top 15 pitcher. This can be
a
top 15
pitcher. And
didn't
he just struggle again? And I put that in quotes because it's spring training, and I don't ever pay attention to pitcher ERA.
He's struggling in a spring start? I didn't see that.
Yeah. I thought he did. I could be mistaken. I remember somebody in that range. But anyway, not to sidebar you on that one. But
no, that's okay.
I was bringing that up for a point of even if he didn't, is I just love the, like, a good one. Jake Odorizzi in his first spring start and he gets shelled and everybody's like, oh, the Astros want to get their money back. Like, he's going to be fine. It's his first spring start. He said all he wanted to do out there, all he wanted to do was go out there, hit his speed, and throw fastballs and hit the strike zone. Like, it's spring. Chill out, people.
Yeah.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, we've run through pretty much all of no, we have run through all of Jake's guys here. We don't have time to get through all of mine and DVR's guys, but since you bring up Jake Odorizzi, DVR, you've got a couple of Astros on here. Pick your poison. Which Astro you want to make a case for?
I mean, Alex Bregman goes early. He kind of goes where Anthony Rendon goes, and Jake touched on him earlier. I think both of those guys are undervalued, but Bregman, yeah. If you go back to his pre-2020 numbers, I think if you combine the previous three seasons combined, he's top 10 in every category we care about. I mean, he's a great all-around offensive player. You see that in WRC+. He scores runs, he drives in runs, he hits for power, doesn't steal many bases, but his batting average floor is really high. I can't imagine Alex Bregman being a third rounder again going into next season, talking about 15 team leagues, unless he's hurt again in 2021. So for me, like, he's one of those early round targets that I keep going after. And basically he's there because he doesn't steal bases. You don't have to get steals from every single player you draft.
No.
You need to get the other categories too. But the other Astro is Ryan Pressly. And he kind of fits into my broader strategy. Most of the leagues I play in, you can't make trades, and even if you can, it's hard to get saves. Pressly, I think, is the kind of guy that goes for about $15 in an auction. He's going to go in the 7th or 8th round of a 15-team mixed league, and I think he's pretty safely their guy. I think the skills are maybe a notch below your Hader, Hendricks, Aroldis Chapman group, but they're not that far behind. I think he could run, you know, 33 or 35% K rate over a full season. He's got good control. He doesn't have an ugly home run issue. So for me, he's kind of where I draw the line. Like, I have to get a closer at least as good as Ryan Pressly on most of my teams this year because the closer pool is such a mess.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And that was something I put some stock into this year where I wanted one of those. I'm never going to pay up for Hader Hendricks, but I want one of the next group of guys who I feel very comfortable unless injury or just complete, unavoidable, unseeable disaster befalls them. They're going to be their team's guy. So I think, you know, Presley's definitely in that group. I put guys like Brad Hand in that group as well. Guys who, you know, most likely.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm legitimately, that's one of my non-guys. I am 1,000% off Brad Hand.
Are you off him because of skills, cost, both?
So I forget who mentioned it, but it was before the offseason even really started. Like, it was back in January. He was talking about his drop in fastball velo when they were talking about when he was a free agent, when teams were still looking at him. And I remember reading that, which was a big concern. And then the fact that he has been, and I know I just sat here and said, ignore spring training, but at the same time, it was because of that. Like, there's a reason behind it. There was already the reason behind his fastball taking a severe downturn for the past couple of years and majorly last year. And now so far he's been getting roughed up and Rainey's been looking really good. I still think Hand has the job as of today. But actually, and then our guy Greg Jewett just talked about him today on the site and said that, you know, you might have to look out for Rainey too, is to steal some, if not even potentially like 30-40% of the saves. So that's why it's more so I'm worried that Hand doesn't even have the job for the entire year.
Well, Jake, we're just going at loggerheads.
He's pretty shaky. He's pretty shaky for a guy inside my top 10 among relievers. Another rankings update coming out before the weekend. I think he might dip just a little.
I just moved it to 13, so there you go. He dropped outside of my top 10.
Yeah, that Kirby Yates injury didn't really do us any favors. No. I actually liked Yates if he was healthy to be a top 10 closer this year, and obviously he's probably not going to pitch this
year. Well, there's
a
question for you guys. Would you take Romano or would you take Hand as of today?
I would take Hand easily. I guess you could maybe talk me into Romano at cost over Hand at cost.
Yeah, I would take Hand just because I think there's still a chance that the Jays split it up. Mm-hmm. You know, Romano could share with Dolis, or they could bring in Merriweather or Hatch. They've actually got a pretty interesting stable of relievers they could turn to. So it really depends on how they want to manage the bullpen in general. If they're going to be that flexible team that takes the best reliever and uses him in the most important situation, then Romano might be a 15 or 20 save guy, and those other guys might all get smaller shares. It's really hard to get a read on that team right now because they haven't been in this situation in a while. Garrett versus Hand, I'm taking Hand.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I worry about, you know, David Bell, you know, they had Raisel Iglesias all those years, right? But they love using Garrett all over the place, and he's obviously going to get the first crack at being a starter, but with all the power arms that are in the back of that bullpen, and we don't know exactly what's going to happen with TJ Antone and Michael Lorenzen for the entire season. Mm-hmm. Like, Garrett is definitely the best reliever in that bullpen. I think there is some risk to him being their for sure locked in closer for the entire season. That's what I worry about. I don't worry about his inning for inning ability or anything like that.
So I think the Presley thing, for all our crossover sports people out there, I think the Presley is the cutoff for me. I'm at five. No, I would say Iglesias at six is the cutoff for me. There's like six, and then it turns into a mess very, very, very fast. And what I was going to say, the pull over the fantasy football comparison is that I feel like it's the tight end. If you don't get one of the big two or three, arguably next year, this is similar. Like, if you don't get one of the six you can trust, like, just sit out and don't even pay. Like, everybody says don't pay for saves, but I think if you can get one of the top six at a reasonable cost, I would definitely want to anchor one of those down. And I have. So far, I've ended up with Chapman, Hader, or Presley, actually, as one of the three so far as in most of my leagues, just to get that one and then to play the game with the rest. Because, I mean, you're already talking about, I'm looking at my list here, you got the split possibility with what you guys have already talked about. We don't know. Is Rodriguez the guy, or are they going to try what's his face again? Crick.
I mean, do you trust that team at all?
They're not going to win a lot either, yeah.
Minnesota's split. San Diego is all over the map. Tampa Bay's all over the map. I mean, there's just a lot. I mean, do you want terrible Matt Barnes, but he's going to lead and save? So it's a mess super fast.
Yeah. I really like Emilio Pagan. Dennis Lynn's been talking him up. Our Padres beat writer has been talking him up as the, if someone pulls away from the pack, it's going to be him. And I think he gives you...
I have him the highest. But,
yeah. I think he gives you usable strikeouts and usable rates pretty much no matter what. So he's a guy who I find myself circling back to a lot. I think he could be a little bit of a sneaky cheat code at the back end of drafts.
Like Arizona, the manager and the owner disagree on who they like. I mean, there's a perfect example right
something's
there.
Something's going on in the NL West with between that team and the Rockies. Like, I don't know. You just got that. It's like the Dodgers have forced everyone into this malaise over the last decade, and hopefully the Padres can.
I know Kenley
Jansen's
not even safe anymore. Yeah. I mean,
it's the new world order of reliever usage in Major League Baseball.
Saves plus holds. Is that what we're turning this into?
I mean, argument? I don't think we want to, because I would go way too long because I love saves plus holds. We can talk about that at another time. Can I throw one of my guys out before we go? So Starling Marte, to me, feels like a cheat code because everyone's pushing, right? Like, so I am very firmly on the Mike Trout's the number one pick and Juan Soto's the number two pick because they're the two best hitters, purely hitters. And I don't think anyone would question that fact. And so I want those guys, and I'll worry about steals later. And then you find Starling Marte sitting, around pick like 40, 45? And, like, the guy's going to steal 25 bases. He maybe pushes up to 30. He's going to give you good batting average. If you use OBP, he's giving you 340 last year, 342 the year before that. And, you know, those are maybe a little bit above career norms. But still, I think we can expect somewhere in that 340 range in OBP. He's going to hit 15 to 20 homers. Like, it's all there. And you get those steals that are a foundation, like a total foundational element where you're not passing on the elite, elite, elite hitters to get those steals. And like you said, Jake, 100 steals could win you the category this season. So if you're getting 25 to 30 from one guy, you already have the foundation to at least be competitive. Starling Marte is a guy who, if he's available to me at ADP, it's an auto pick. It is a half second off the timer and I'm clicking draft on Starling Marte.
I don't have a problem with that. And honestly, the funny thing is with Starling Marte is the past 3 years in my projections, every time I finish the projections and I'm like, oh, Starling Marte is in the top 20 outfielders again. I always expect them to drop out, and they're like, oh, he's back inside the top 20 again. That's just Starling Marte being Starling Marte.
I think if he were to take a step back, it would just be, 10 or 12 fewer bags than we expect, and he would kind of be like a Lorenzo Cain sort of player. Sure. So if you draft him in the fourth round or third or fourth round, it's not going to ruin you. I think there's at least some speed there. He's high up in that order, so he's going to score a lot of runs. I don't think he's a batting average liability. So there's a really nice floor there, and I'm with you on Starling Marte. The dream draft for me is Yelich in the first, Buehler in the second, Bregman or Rendon in the third, and Marte in the fourth, because then I've got categorical balance. Mm-hmm. I've got an ace already, and I can do any number of things based on what else is happening in the room to sort of put those other early building blocks around that group.
Yeah.
Have you done a My Guys with Nando yet?
Yes, because Under the Radar every week is basically an episode of My Guys with Nando.
I just looking down this list, and I was like, we didn't talk about Tapia. We didn't talk about Jared Walsh. I'm thinking like all Nando's guys.
We've covered Ty France.
Ty France. That show is slowly becoming the Victor Robles and Ty France show.
It's not that much Victor Robles, but we've realized though that Ty France might be a lot like Jed Jerko. Like that could be the best case sort of outcome for him, and the level of infatuation for Nando is getting pretty close with France.
I mean, he would be thrilled if that was the case if they turned it to him. The reason it made me think about it is because I saw a tweet last night, and it was somebody tweeted out the batting exit velocity over 110 miles per hour. Number one was Stanton, and then tied for second was Alonso, Vlad, and Rowdy Tellez. And I remember that being a Nando guy like last year.
Yeah. Rowdy's catching some extra love around the industry right now, too. He's very cheap, good corner guy for deeper leagues. Playing time maybe a little shaky once Springer comes back, but I think with Springer out, Grichuk plays, it kind of takes some of the pressure off of the outfield rotation, and the DH first base mix kind of gets a little bump up too, because I think if Grichuk's not playing in the outfield, they're going to want to play him a little bit, and they're going to move guys around, and through all that shuffling, Tellez gets hit a little bit. Last guy I'll throw out there, Emmanuel Classe. So, right, we're talking about saves being a problem. Maybe it's Nick Whitgren instead, but I think playing into what you were saying, Jake, I would like to get one early and then just take shots late and not really mess around with those mid-tier guys. Closers 10 to 20, 10 to 25 are just loaded with risk. But if I can throw some of my last picks at guys that don't necessarily have a job today but could have the job in 10 days, sure, I'm going to do that. Class A throws 100 with movement. Like, what else do you want from a possible closer?
And I like that one for the reason that I'm actually getting Karinchak in a lot of places too. But it's one of those ones where it's almost another football comparison. You're almost handcuffing yourself, or you're getting that backup plan with him, and you can still use Clase and get that for the leagues Clase. Where, you do go. What?
What did you say?
Oh, sorry.
You just called him
Clase. I forgot his name was Class A. I'm sorry. So anyway, I'm going to call him Clase for the rest of the show now, just because of that. No, so you get the ratio similar to, it's not quite Andrew Miller, because Andrew Miller was going like two innings a lot of times, but whereas, the leagues where, especially you guys, I prefer the 12 teams, but if you're playing a 15 teams mix or you're playing in mono, any type of that, you start to get to the point where the break turns into, it's better to just to carry this guy with the ratios and somebody like him who also adds the strikeouts than to honestly go with a terrible starter pitcher who's just going to kill your ratios. But you might get a couple wins out of it. Yeah, whoop-de-doo.
All right. Well, I think we did a lot of good here, helping anybody who hasn't listened to any pods yet, even people who have been listening all along, really making it clear who Jake really likes and who we all really like this draft season. If you want more like this, we have a My Guys piece up on the site for our subscribers. theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast will get you in at $1 a month to start. It's the best deal we do all year. So go ahead, jump in on that while you can, because it will not be out there for very long. Jake, thanks for taking a break from football prep to join us today. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, you can see it's all projections. I don't spend a lot of time on the pronunciations. There's my case for Clase.
Nice recovery. On Twitter, of course, he's at AllInKid. Beller is at MBeller. I am at Derek Van Riper. Thank you for listening to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are back with our first Sunday waiver episode this weekend, and we're going to run that one live as well, so be sure to check that out. Good luck with your drafts this weekend.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.